My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you brought your A game. A man, no rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game. Better bring your A game. Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you brought your A game. A man, no rain.
Hey, now it's the Mike and JD show, and I'm your host, Mike Gilbert. And this week, JD is out once again. JD unfortunately had a death in the family, so thoughts and prayers go out to the Oliva family. He is out of state right now. So I decided to bring in my cousin Joe. How you doing, Joe?
Definitely fed-pilled, apparently. Like, yeah. Which way am I pointing? Yeah, definitely fed-pilled. Yeah, doing pretty well, man. Football sucked this weekend, but wrestling was fun. So,
yeah, sad day in America. I think the two football teams that unless you're inside like Missouri and inside like Eastern Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. you wanted neither one of the teams that won today to win. And unfortunately for the country and for football fans worldwide, they both won. The Eagles and the Chiefs.
Sad the day. Worst possible outcome. So now I'm just going to be rooting for gambling.
Yeah. I told my wife that I wanted Moses to send the 10 plagues of Egypt to the Super Bowl. And she was like, you know, we went to church today. Believe it or not, my pastor at church today, he actually, at the end of his opening prayer for the sermon, actually prayed for the Eagles. And I almost quit the congregation immediately. Yeah. I almost just walked. I was like, nope, can't do it.
Yeah, that would have been fair.
Can't do it. But we stayed because he's a good pastor.
Oh, well, at least he's got that going for him. He's got to change up on those football teams, though.
Well, so it's weird. Like in Hawaii, it's kind of like when I used to live in Las Vegas back before the Raiders got there. It's almost like neutral territory. So you get football fans, like they just kind of pick random teams. The 49ers were like the main team here here in Hawaii because they had Jesse Sapolu. And there's a lot of migration between Hawaii and San Francisco. So the 49ers were really big here. In fact, just down the road, there's the 49er Grill from my house. So they're real popular here. But our cable system here is Spectrum out of L.A. So we get the Rams games locally now. So there's a lot of 49ers fans, Rams fans, Raiders fans. There's Cowboy fans freaking everywhere. And then all of a sudden, there's Eagles fans. It's so weird. But it's kind of a unique place to be. It's really a lot like Las Vegas back in the day.
Well, in Las Vegas now, let's not pretend like there's nothing but Raiders fans in Las Vegas still. I mean, that's still very much a neutral city.
Yeah, the Raiders are pretty new to the territory.
Yeah.
And honestly in LA too.
Yeah.
Like they are Rams fans and Chargers fans when it's like super convenient. Mm-hmm. But they could go either way. The only two teams that matter in the city of LA are the Dodgers and the Lakers. Nothing else matters in that city.
Yeah. But hey, this is not a football and baseball show. What's going on in wrestling today, Mike?
Well, this is the Mike and JD show. We can essentially just talk about whatever the hell we want to talk about.
That's fair.
Yeah. Like we can get weird. UFOs are a good topic. JFK files about to get released. Martin Luther King Jr. files getting released. So are the Robert F. Kennedy Jr. files. We got all kinds of stuff coming down the pike, so we.
I fully expect those to be released and nothing but redacted information. It'll all be blacked out.
That's typically what happens, and then they go in front of Congress, and it's like, how could you even read this? It's just like a paper with six words on it in black lines.
Yeah, and especially like the JFK stuff. It's been what, 64 years now, 62 years? Like,
yeah,
come on, just get it over with.
So apparently, there are still like CIA assets out there that kind of fumbled the whole thing, and they don't want to embarrass those people, and they're still alive. So they're like in their 80s and 90s right now, and some of them, they don't want their identities revealed. Because they were assets on the ground in Mexico City when Lee Harvey Oswald was there doing his shenanigans literally weeks before he supposedly assassinated the president. So
yeah.
I'm looking forward to when those files come out. Maybe I'll do a witching hour. I haven't done one of those in a long time.
Yeah. Do research on like the real stuff that's happening when those files get released, like the stuff that they're distracting you from. That way you can talk about both.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. All right, guys. Hey, if you're in the chat, thank you for being here. I greatly appreciate it. If you are watching on the Mike and JD Show Network or on the Voices of Wrestling Network, no matter which one, please give us a thumbs up. Make sure you're a subscriber to the channel and throw down a comment. Send the algorithm a note that this is the place to be. This is a happening spot. And I will get to your chats. I'll get to your chats no matter what, but if you wanted to just give me money, I'll take it. Like, you can send a super chat at any point, but even if you don't, I'll probably still get to your chats. So we do got to start the show off on a somber note. JD, Joe, are you aware of who Colonel De Beers is? Have you ever heard of Colonel De Beers?
Was he the one with the diamonds?
Not
De Beers diamonds.
No. All right. So, Colonel De Beers passed away, unfortunately, at the age of 80. So I got an obituary here I'm going to read and then just talk a little bit about the life and times of Colonel De Beers. Edward Waskowski, known to fans as Colonel De Beers, passes away at the age of 80. He was from St. Joseph, Missouri, so your neck of the woods there. His athletic journey began at Central High School in St. Joseph, where he excelled in football and track. He continued at Northwest Missouri State University, earning All-Missouri Intercollegiate Athletic Association honors. He had aspirations to play in NFL, but that didn't work out. He went to professional wrestling. He trained under Harley Race and Lord Littlebrook. He debuted in 1972 as Easy Ed Waskowski. I think that's a Polish name, a good Polish name. There you go. He quickly became a top heel in various regional promotions, capturing titles in Central States, NWA, Pacific Northwest, with his tag team partner, Playboy Buddy Rose, and then NWA World Tag Team Championship in the San Francisco territory. Then in 1985, he introduced the character that would define his career, Colonel De Beers, a former South African military officer. The gimmick was deeply controversial as it was rooted in real-world politics. So I'm going to explain this. This stuff just would not work today. If somebody tried to do something like this, it would just totally shit the bed. And honestly, it was controversial for the time, but it was because at 1985, we're far removed from like the 60s and the 50s, whenever you had like traveling Nazis wrestling, right? So like, so this was about as bad as it could get. The gimmick was deeply controversial as it was rooted in real world politics, specifically the apartheid system of racial segregation and white and minority rule in South Africa. At the time, apartheid was a major global issue with widespread protests and economic sanctions and increasingly political pressure to dismantle the system. De Beers was presented as an unapologetic supporter of apartheid, using racially charged rhetoric to generate immense heat from audiences. His persona was intended to reflect the arrogance and oppression of South Africa's ruling government at the time, which was widely condemned by the international community. His most infamous storylines played up his character's racial bias, most notably when he refused to wrestle black opponents, which was like, I couldn't even imagine that in like today, but like 1985, that's still pretty freaking bad.
Yeah. Pretty fresh.
Yeah. Yeah. Wrestling was wild in the '80s. Let's just say that, the character drew significant backlash, particularly as apartheid protests grew in the US and other countries. While wrestling villains often push social boundaries, De Beers' gimmick stood out because it was based on real-world oppression rather than a fictionalized or exaggerated evil. This made the character particularly incendiary. Some promotions hesitated to feature him, prominently due to sensitivity of the subject matter. I saw him notably, I believe it was in the AWA. I saw him, his stuff there. It ended up evolving, and he kind of dropped some of the racial overtones a little bit later because obviously it was like just way too controversial. But he was a well-liked guy in the business despite all of that. He was a good worker, not like, you know, one of the great workers, but he was good, well-trained, professional. He just happened to have like this apartheid gimmick. But he was not like in real life an apartheid supporter. It'd be kind of like watching, you know, the Inglourious Basterds movie and then judging one of those guys who's playing a Nazi in that movie as like, that's what they are in real life. When in fact, they're just acting. That's the way people treated him in real life. But in pro wrestling, real life often overlaps with fiction, and a lot of times people treat you as your character, and so you just can't do that stuff anymore. But again, the 80s were freaking wild. But yeah, he was around a long time, held a lot of championships, NWA United States Heavyweight Championship from San Francisco, the, like I said, World Tag Team Championships with Buddy Rose, NWA Pacific Northwest Heavyweight Championship. So he's real big in Oregon. In fact, I think that's where he retired out of. Yeah, he actually retired out of there, and he ended up having a wrestling school. He retired in 2005 and then co-founded a wrestling school in Portland, Oregon, where he trained aspiring wrestlers and passed down his knowledge of the business. In 2004, he was honored by the Cauliflower Alley alongside longtime tag team partner Buddy Rose. So there you go. That is Colonel DeBeers. Rest in peace to the Colonel, man. Crazy gimmick. That shit just wouldn't fly today.
Absolutely not. And it's crazy to think that that stuff got away back in the 80s. Like, absolutely could not happen today. I can understand. And there was an indie wrestler. Remember the Unapologetic Liberal or something like that? The Progressive Liberal?
We interviewed him.
Yeah, during the 2016 run.
Yeah, that was
guy got threats.
Like, yeah, it was bad. So we interviewed the Progressive Liberal Daniel Richards, because he was a play. He would come out in like a kind of a Hawaiian style shirt with Hillary's face all over it.
Yeah,
and he was wrestling in like West Virginia, deep South. Yeah, and we interviewed him. He's like, "Yeah, man, I'm getting a lot of heat." I would assume you were.
Yeah, the balls on that guy. That's like the closest thing I could think to getting controversial, and, you know, not nearly the same, but getting that kind of controversial real life heat from wrestling fans, where, like, you know, you're kind of taking your own life into your hands when you step into those areas.
Because a lot of the people, they know it's all bullshit, but they, like, if you do something mean and controversial on television in your character, they will treat you as if like you're doing that in real life. It's almost like old ladies watching soap operas with some of these wrestling fans. It's wild.
Tessa Blanchard heat.
So Tessa Blanchard's heat is based off of real life stuff.
Yes.
It's like Colonel DeBeers was playing a character on television. It just was way too controversial for the time. It probably would have gotten over on an episode of A-Team, but it's not getting over on professional wrestling, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Now, I say all that, but he was a successful wrestler. He had a good run.
Yeah, Nathan just pointing out he had a great feud under his real name with Piper in 1980.
Let me see. Where is that one at? Nathan right here. So never saw him as DeBeers. He had a great feud in Portland with Piper in 1980 under his real name. Yeah. So, yeah, he didn't actually – he had a good career from 72 to 85 before Colonel DeBeers, but, like, that's the one that people most know him for, because I mean, it was during the boom of the 80s where wrestling just got really hot and popular. I know that WWF took over, but, you know, other companies were doing some pretty decent numbers there for a little bit too. So,
yeah. And that's always cool for me to learn more about guys who've come from Missouri, because the St. Louis and Kansas City area really has a lot of wrestling history. I believe there's still Harley Race had the school in the St. Louis area. But I believe there's a wrestling school in a small indie up in Kansas City that's still doing pretty well too. So it's nice to hear more come from that. And another one of those guys who just like the football to pro wrestling crossover, which I think is something making a big comeback now with WWE's NIL program. But that was, you know, you hear a lot of those guys from the 70s and 80s. A lot of those guys were football players who couldn't make it to the NFL and just found a career another way.
Yeah. Yeah. So rest in peace, Colonel DeBeers. I'm sure the flagship will actually do like a full rundown. So Joe Lanza is very likely to go through like a YouTube deep dive and watch a bunch of his matches this week. But the news just dropped today. Yeah. And I had, not only did I have church, but I had football. And I also took the family to an outdoor restaurant, and we got there and it freaking rained all over everybody. And the guy playing guitar, he was like, at this restaurant, there's just like a guitar player singing songs to everybody while you eat. And he's getting rained on. So he's sang the song No Rain by Blind Melon. So I got
Did you not think to check the weather before you go to an outdoor restaurant?
With Hawaii, it's weird. Every day the forecast calls for rain.
Gotcha.
But you just assume it's going to last for a minute and blow over, which is what it typically does. But we went into more of the hilly area to like where it's a lot greener and it rains more often. So we drove through there. No matter what, like it's always going to say it's going to rain, right? Gotcha. So we just drove there anyway. It's like we just didn't believe it. And sure enough, it happened to be right this time. So
yeah,
but it rains almost every day in Hawaii, but it's usually like for like 5 minutes and it just stops. Yeah. But man, I watched a ton of wrestling this week. So actually we're going to get to Saturday night's main event in a little bit. I also watched Raw, Dynamite and Collision. Joe for the first time in a long time watched Impact. So we'll talk a little bit of Impact. TNA fans, if you're in the chat, I know I always get a lot of TNA fans. So if you got any TNA questions or comments, go ahead and drop them down. But so Dave Meltzer, who I believe is probably the guy who gets accused the most for being an AEW homer, when in reality that has not been true in a long time. It was never true, but I think he was more positive to them than he was to WWE or TNA or anybody else. I think his coverage of like his taste kind of fits what he likes the most there. And he clearly has a relationship with Tony Khan. So it seemed like his coverage was leaning more always towards positive for AEW. But it has been a 180 for a long time. And he lately has been beating up AEW kind of, and it's almost like he's writing to Tony Khan specifically, like, hey, you're going to have to get this stuff cleaned up. Because yes, you have all this new money from this television deal, but your popularity continues to rapidly decline. And the WWE with their new Netflix deal is seemingly somehow more popular this year than they even were last year, which is pretty unbelievable if you think about it, because last year was the biggest year they've ever had. And then this year is probably going to be even bigger.
Yeah.
So fan interest hasn't increased despite the TV deal. AEW's ratings and ticket sales continue to decline, especially in the 18 to 34 demographic. This is notes from the Observer. AEW is losing viewers to Max streaming, although Dynamite still performs well on cable. So HBO Max did come out this week and say that AEW was among the top sports programs on Max, but didn't provide any data, didn't provide anything. It just kind of said it. And now I've seen people online say, oh, they're getting like over 1 million views on Max, which is completely unbelievable and not even remotely true. If somebody wants to challenge that and actually provide data, I would love to cover it. In fact, I go on to Max to watch Collision last night because I'm in Hawaii. I have to watch on delay and it's not even on the front page. And even though I've watched every episode of Dynamite since it's been on Max, it's still not in my like algorithm to put that on my front page. Right. So it's still like, there's a bunch of other stuff, but it's still not there. So I always have to search for it every week. So that tells me that it can't be doing that great on Max.
So it's one of those things like where, you know, when I was in high school and I would run in a race and finish in fifth, but there was like five people running, I'm still finishing top five. You know, there's not that much competition. Like Max, it does have NBA. I think they have some hockey. Somebody may correct me if I'm wrong on that, but I think they have hockey. But
I don't know that NBA or hockey is even on there.
I do think they simulcast, maybe.
Do they? I don't think they do.
So what other sports would be on there? I mean, if you're among the top finishers in sports, there's got to be sports on there.
This computer that I'm talking to you in has a lot of information on it. Hold on. What sports are live streamed on Max. All right, let's see. Stream the NBA. And okay, yeah, so you were right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
60% of the time, I'm right every time.
There. Yeah, there you go.
So, yeah, okay. If you've got three or four sports on there, of course, you're going to be among the top finishers because there's not like 100 events that's happening every week for you to finish, you know, in the bottom half.
Yeah.
So you can
Antonio Baker says they have hockey in the live sports section. That's where AW is in the live sports section. So I guess when I'm scrolling through, I need to go over to live sports. Mm-hmm. I guess that's what, okay. So maybe it's just me. Maybe I don't know what I'm doing, which is like pretty typical for me. The company's initial appeal was that it was a true alternative to WWE, but now it has too many ex-WWE stars, a stale format, and weak baby faces. The show has no clear future direction and lacks strong young stars. And many fans feel AEW isn't presenting itself as a major league promotion and are frustrated with the product. That frustration carried over with Dynamite this week as it did not get good reviews at all. In fact, it was one of the weaker Dynamites. Collision was actually pretty good, I thought. But it just didn't feel big time. And I think that's kind of the problem with the product right now. They have a lot of old stars. Jeff Jarrett, 57 years old, being pushed in the main event scene. He's taking on 44-year-old Claudio Castagnoli next week. Adam Copeland and Pac main evented this week. And Adam Copeland, obviously, is if he's not 50, he's almost 50.
I think he's 51.
The Rock and Roll Express is our part of the storyline.
Yeah.
So, which I think I can't tell if that's Ricky Morton or Chris Jericho. They look so similar to me right now.
Yeah.
But Chris Jericho, obviously, is still a major push star. Shelton Benjamin and Bobby Lashley are getting a big push in the tag team division right now. They just squashed Private Party, which I think I'm actually kind of with, honestly.
Benjamin and Lashley are 49 and 48, respectively, but they are incredibly over. The only problem is they're over as faces when they're supposed to be heels. So I think they need to address that at some point. And it's the same thing that happened when they were in WWE as the Hurt Business. Like, they were supposed to be heels, but everybody just freaking loved them. At some point, you're just going to have to turn them face. But it would be another concern that your most over tag team is 49 and 48 years old.
Yeah, but I'm watching them, and neither of them look that old. Like, so the problem with, like, Jericho, Edge, and Jarrett, they're all, like, and Edge and Jarrett, like, they're in, like, pretty good shape. Jericho, not necessarily. But they look every bit their age as far as in their face goes. Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin might as well be 35 to me. Like, I'm just, I know they're old because I just have been watching them on TV for 20 years. And I've obviously been a big fan of theirs for a long time. So I know that they're old, but they don't look that old. Shelton Benjamin is not moving so quickly these days, but he still looks like he's great. And the tag team, you know, they squashed Private Party this week. They squashed them last week. They're the new tag champions. I like them as tag champions. I think that keeps them away from the world title scene. I don't think they need to be involved in that. And I kind of look at them as being like, you know, Dr. Death and Terry Bam Bam Gordy, kind of like that level, like just kind of an ass kicking tag team, which this company hasn't had. Like, they've had the Young Bucks, which they're not ass kickers. They're just great match havers. FTR, you know, they were heels for a while, not their babyface, but they're not ass kickers either. They're just really good wrestlers. Private Party, the worst tag team champions in the history of the company by far. They were never over. They don't try to get over. They're just doing the same shtick they were doing 5 years ago, and they have not improved one bit. You know, I actually liked Big Bill and Ricky Starks, but we'll get into Ricky Starks in a little bit. But, you know, I think I kind of dig this Shelton and Lashley tag team. I'm into them.
Yeah, one of my other concerns, I really definitely think they have to make them face at some point.
Yeah.
I just really worry that in the future, sometime this year, we're going to see Edge and Christian versus Lashley and Shelton Benjamin, and it'll be the oldest tag title match in company history. Terrence and they're all elderly wrestling in the chat.
Yeah. I mean, look, wrestling as a whole has gotten older.
Yeah, well, guys are in their physical, not prime, but physically better for longer now. Like, you're not on the road wrestling 250, 300 days a year anymore. You know, the medicine nowadays is a little bit cleaner and a lot better. so guys can perform longer. Like Finn Balor, like that guy doesn't look 42 or 43, but you know, he's in his early 40s.
Yeah. And he didn't come to the company until he was like 34, 35.
Yeah.
And same with AJ Styles. I think AJ came to the company, was like 36, and
yeah,
he hasn't been on TV in a long time, but you know, he's pushing 50. Mm-hmm. And he's still pretty good. Randy Orton,
yeah,
you know, doesn't do a whole lot, but he obviously he's like way up there. And Cody Rhodes is almost 40 now, and so
yeah.
And Roman Reigns is 40-ish.
So. I think Cody and Roman are 37, 38-ish right now.
Yeah. So I think just wrestling as a whole is just like the stars have gotten older. What I think pro wrestling needs is an influx of young talent to kind of break through the ceiling, which is kind of something we were having in the late 90s, specifically yeah. with WCW, where Hogan and Luger and Sting and Kevin Nash and Scott Hall were kind of like holding back, you know, Benoit, Jericho, Guerrero, and these other cats. And so they ended up leaving and going somewhere else, and they were getting pushed. And then that problem started to exist in the WWE eventually, and so that people ended up leaving there, and now they went over to AEW, and now that problem's existing in AEW, where the young stars just can't get through, they can't break through because these old dudes just won't get the hell out of the way.
Yeah, I think that's
something you got to give.
That's one of the bigger things that Nick Khan has been doing in WWE, was getting away from signing all the mid-30s, late 30s indie wrestlers and pushing more for the NIL stuff, because now you've got Bron Breakker, mid-20s, Oba Femi waiting in the wings, mid-20s, you know, you got Tiffany Stratton, mid-20s, you know, Rhea Ripley's still only like 28 and is right. the most over female in all of wrestling. And AEW has the resources, they have the money to do something similar. You don't have to do an entire system like WWE has. You're not making $1 billion a year, but you still can. You have Ring of Honor, you've got Daily's Place, Tony Khan is a billionaire. They are making almost $200 million a year. Set up a system to get some young guys ready, because when all of your biggest stars are 40 plus, some of them 50 plus, you've got to worry about the future of your company.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Dave talked about it this week, but JD and I have been talking about this forever, and we've been calling out Private Party, and specifically Private Party and Hook, for a long time, because they're just not out there hustling, working everywhere. And, you know, I think the belief is that Tony Khan should be forcing them to do that. Kind of like what we saw with Fraxium on Impact this week. Mm-hmm. Like WWE is just like, no, you're going to TNA this week, and yeah. you're just going to go have a really good match and then come back. And so now they're actually like going to TNA and getting more reps and getting more work in over there. And I think that's a good thing. And I think AEW needs a system like that, but I think they need a stream of independent promoters around the country and around the world where they can do that. I think it was smart. I think they recently sent, who did they send to Japan recently? A female. I'm trying to remember. I think it might've been Julia Hart. I can't remember, but they've sent some female talent over to Japan. I think they need to do that more. Send them to
CMLL. Well, I know Athena went over there for Stardom, but she had wrestled Stardom before.
But they need to send them over there for like 4 months and then, you know what I mean? And have them come back. Okay. Nathan. Thank you, Nathan. Keeping me on track.
Anna Jay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I also think they should, not a touring house show, but they need to do something like what NXT does, where they have small 500 to 1,000 person house shows just in Florida. So you're not spending the cost on the traveling across the country, not really worried about making much money on it, but get a couple big stars on it. You know, Moxley would probably go to those. Edge would probably go to one, and then have all of your young guys on it. You know, that's where Hook probably needs to be wrestling at least once a week on a show like that. And you've got to recruit the guys who want to go out and do that too. You said WWE sent Nathan Frazier and Axiom and forced them to go. I'm going to tell you, those guys were probably begging to go. Because
their arms did not get twisted. Yeah.
Yeah. Because Axiom actually put on Twitter that he actually was a fan of TNA because it was what was on TV when he was in Spain. And, you know, that was a big thing for him when he was in Spain. Nathan Frazier, just a huge wrestling fan, always wanted to do that. And Frazier was a guy who was wrestling all over before WWE signed him. He actually wrestled on AEW Dark, I think.
Yeah, he did Shorts of Dark, and he was also on TNA Explosion too against Chris Sabin.
Yeah, so like, and that not long before he got signed, he was always destined to be a WWE guy. He was trained by Rollins, so that was always going to happen. But you got to have guys who want it and want to go out. But I do think there might be some worries for guys who, especially towards the end of their contract, do I want to go out and wrestle an indie show, possibly get hurt? And that takes away my option of exploring other opportunities if I want to leave, because maybe my contract gets extended by 8 months. You know, is it worth it to those guys if they get extended for 8 months, if they get hurt outside of AEW?
Right. Well, and they're, you know, they're, these young guys are making, you know, either close to or over six figures for AEW, and they're wrestling like two or three times a month.
Yeah. If that. Yeah.
Yeah. If that, and it's not worth it to them to go to an independent promotion for a couple hundred bucks, you know, and so that's why I'm like, they need to have a system in place to almost like force these young guys, like, hey, we're going to send you to a contract, but here are the promotions. These are the ones you're going to work. And you don't get to go over there. And so one of the problems with Tony when he was working with Impact before, because we thought this was going to happen with Impact, they sent Private Party to Impact before, but then the edict was Private Party can't lose. Right. So they're in the ring with Eric Young and Joe Doering, but Private Party can't lose. So they had to put a third tag team in. Right. Because he's not willing to let his guys, because he thinks so little of Impact, and he probably thinks so little of these independent promotions. You know, you got to get rid of that ideology. Yeah. If you want them to not lose, then it's never going to work. They have to be able to lose matches, right? I'm not saying they have to get buried, but you have to be willing to let your guys lose when they're going around to these other promotions. Because if not, like, it's just never going to work. Which is why, you know, this NXT WWE or TNA thing is working, because TNA guys go to NXT and they lose. NXT guys go over to TNA and they lose, and vice versa. And when, you know, it's like more equal level stars, they're having the matches and they're losing in a storyline way, with shenanigans and things like that. So that's why it's working. So you got to get rid of the, hey, I can't let my guys lose type of stuff. Yeah. Like, you have to be willing to let them eat shit a little bit. So if you're going to send Private Party, they should be able to House of Glory and go wrestle whoever the fuck, and you don't need to worry about what the outcome is, because no one's watching anyway, right? Yeah. Just worry about the outcomes on your program. Don't worry about what they're doing outside.
Yeah, absolutely. And Deadlock Pro Wrestling, DPW? I would definitely try to get involved with those guys, because there seems to be a lot of good talent coming out of there, a lot of good wrestling coming out of there. But man, this is something I talked about couple of years ago with Hook specifically, because him and Tiffany Stratton started, at least in ring wise, right around the same time. It was like a month apart, and within like a 2 month span, Stratton had like doubled the amount of matches that Hook had. And I'd pointed it out. I was like, hey, look, Hook is still doing four or five moves. It's, you know, three suplexes and his chokehold, and you've got Tiffany Stratton busting out all these kinds of things. And everybody said, well, you know, it's, all their matches are pre-worked out. They're all routines that they, you know, plan ahead and then go out and perform. That's fine. The match still comes off great. Like, you know, if I'm watching a movie, it doesn't take away from the fact that they rehearsed it to me. You know, I know what I'm watching. But Stratton was wrestling three or four times a week. Hook was wrestling one or two times a week, and then even bumped down from that.
Yeah, and I think he's not. I think he was wrestling one or two times a month, really.
Yeah, and he's not much of a different performer now than he was two, three years ago, whenever he got started. They've got to figure something out.
Yeah, he hasn't improved at all, and he has no more aura. The aura is gone.
That was the thing, is like, everybody's like, oh, but he's over. Well, yeah, he's a good looking young guy. That's only going to take him so far.
Eventually the bell has to ring, and you have to be able to talk, right? And if you can't talk, then like, you better be a big bad motherfucker at that point, to where your facial expressions and your look will get you over, right? Like, big strong beasts can get away with not talking, right? But almost. Little guys like that have to rely on a lot of things. They need a lot of tools in the shed. They definitely got to figure out something. Dave made the point in the Observer, they need to focus on future stars for 2026, not just short-term booking for 2025. Look, I don't want to say they're not doing a good job with everybody. They're doing a great job with Kyle Fletcher and Takeshita. Mm-hmm. I think both of those guys are primed. I think both those guys are primed to be the head of the company in 2026, right? I think they're going to be the top stars. I do worry that some of these guys in their 50s are still going to be lingering around till then. And they're going to be the top stars in the company with dwindling crowds. And that's one of the things that, you know, kind of sucks. You know, they're losing a perception war. They're losing it completely to WWE. But right now, TNA is kind of perceived as a company that has more energy and more momentum. Nobody's saying that they're number two. Nobody worthy of respect.
Yeah.
Nobody worthy of respect is even remotely hinting at them being number two. But if you watched Genesis and you watched this week's Impact, and then you also watched Dynamite and Collision, the wrestlers in AEW are much better. Like, they just have more talent and like they're the higher level of talent. But you can't tell me that that Genesis and Impact didn't have more energy. Yeah. The crowd was way more into those shows than Dynamite and Collision this week. It's not even a difference. In fact, like, on, if you were just like a person flipping through the channels and you had those two shows like side by side, you would probably think, and if you just didn't know any better, you would probably think that the company, that TNA was probably a bigger deal just because it seemed like the crowd was way more into it, despite the fact they have the lesser talent.
Yeah, absolutely. And it goes back to like what really launched the possibility of TNA was the original All In, the first All In. And the executives were there. AEW,
not original TNA. Original
AEW. Sorry. The original AEW, the launch of AEW. And the executives who are all TV executives all there just seeing Bullet Club shirts everywhere, right? And even though that was New Japan, it was the show in America with most, you know, Ring of Honor talent, some New Japan talent. And Tony Khan was able to say, hey, like, look, this stuff outside of WWE is cool. It's hot right now. And that's what helped launch AEW. That's what helped launch Dynamite and get them on TNT as opposed to Access TV or Discovery or whatever channels else were out there. AEW is just, and I think Dave said it plenty of times, they're just not cool right now.
Yeah.
They're not fun. They always will have great matches. You can every week find at least one match from AEW that will be 4-star or above, something that you'll always enjoy if you enjoy in-ring work. But it's not stuff that's just fun that you're excited to watch every week, you know? And that's something that WWE is doing very well right now. Their crowds are energetic. They just have characters that people are bought into. They have characters that people want to see win, people that they want to see lose. I'm not sure AEW's had that in a long time, like somebody that they're actually cheering to win or somebody they're actually cheering to lose for the right reasons.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a lot of people who want Jon Moxley to lose right now, but it's not because like he's coming off as a great heel, you know?
Right. Yeah. So I think their pay-per-views have that.
Always be money.
Yeah. Their pay-per-views have like the people are invested in the pay-per-views. Nobody's really invested in their weekly television right now. And it's a shame because I think for the most part, the shows are always really good. I thought Dynamite started off hot with the Kenny Omega Will Ospreay segment. Mm-hmm. Of course the cameras missed the dives that happened, the moonsaults. One was off the scaffolding and one was off like a balcony of some sort. And of course the cameras missed it, but then, you know, they eventually got back to it, but that was like a hot opening. And then you got Shelton and Bobby Lashley winning the tag titles over Private Party, whom I have just not been happy with. So I was like, okay, we're on to something. And then the show just completely takes a nosedives. Yeah. It just falls off a cliff the last hour or so. And that's kind of been, you know, almost routine lately. So it's tough. I didn't catch the ratings, but I assume they were fine because nobody's going crazy, right?
Like the TV ratings?
Yeah.
I think they were like 665, around 650, 655. So and
give or like take, like, you know, you give or take like 5% of what they normally do, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Right around what they normally do. They did this week lose both the demo and the total viewers to NXT.
Yeah.
And that, because normally NXT gets them on the total viewers, but not the demo.
Well, so with the, it's hard to compare the two because NXT is on CW. So,
so I get it's more widely broadcast, but it is a much smaller station. CW shows normally get 300,000 to 400,000. And NXT doesn't have the Sheldon boost, it doesn't have the Sheldon rub. Getting them like, you know, 900,000 in the first quarter hour.
You know, Big Bang Theory is a good show, but I just could not imagine continuing to watch those reruns. Like, it's good, but it's not that good.
It's comfort background TV for millions of people.
I guess so. Okay. Well, for years when Seinfeld, I think Seinfeld was on TBS for a long time. I used to watch just random episodes of Seinfeld.
Yeah. So if you look at Dynamite ratings every week, I would say 9 times out of 10, the largest quarter hour will be the first, and there will always be a drop off. And then the second largest will usually be somewhere around the middle. Yeah. But 9 times out of 10, it's going to be the first quarter hour from the Big Bang Theory. That lead in always helps them out.
Yeah.
NXT doesn't have that.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, they don't. They definitely don't have that. So, I hope they're able to turn it around.
I think a lot of things are going right. They just got to keep steady, and they've really got to fix that. The main event feud, the main event story of any wrestling show can make or break the show.
Yeah.
A lot of people are just done with this Death Rider stuff. I kind of agree with Dave. He said, just put the title on Omega.
Yes.
Figure the rest out later.
I said that as soon as I saw Omega versus Gabe Kidd. I was like, you know what? Yeah, just put it on Omega. Fuck the rest. Like, let's just figure it out.
Don't even worry about storyline. I know I pitched a story, but don't even worry about storylines. Put the title on him and just go out for 2 to 3 months and just say, hey, Kenny Omega's the best wrestler in the world. We're going to remind people of that. We're going to put him against other top wrestlers. And then figure out a story from there later. But
you pitched the storyline, but I did not get the opportunity to talk about it on the podcast. So give your storyline pitch, because there have been people in AEW Creative that have watched the show.
Okay. So, you know what? I won't even charge royalties if somebody uses this, because I'm pretty sure I stole it from somewhere else and I just don't remember it. But my thought was maybe about 2 to 3 weeks before you introduce the storyline. Have it leaked out there, because you will have people you can leak this to who will put the story out. Have it leaked to people that Kenny Omega has decided he would like to do a WWE run. That way you just kind of get people's ears perked up. And then Jon Moxley could say on TV, if you want your pound of gold, you have to offer up a pound of flesh. If you want a shot at his title, you have to put your job on the line. Then take guys like Ricky Starks, guys like Phoenix, other guys who won out of the company, let them be gone.
Malachi, Miro.
Miro, all those guys. And then you could even do guys who maybe just want some time off or want to go work, in New Japan for a little bit or in Mexico for a little bit. Put your jobs on the line and let Moxley beat them. That way you have some like an actual invested storyline building up to Kenny Omega versus Jon Moxley, where you planted the storyline, and you could even like make thank you Kenny shirts. That way people are thinking like, hey, like this might be his final run. And people could buy into the fact that he might want to go to WWE for the AJ Styles match. He's talked very highly of Roman Reigns, CM Punk.
I think AEW fans would get into it because they're still thinking that Bryan Danielson is retired, even though he still is coming to the shows and he's going to be back soon.
Yeah. So you could have a real storyline, and play the dirt sheets a little bit. You know, they play you quite a bit, so go ahead and play them back a little bit. And you'd have something that fans would be invested in, because fans would be dying if they thought that Kenny Omega was going to leave AEW for WWE. They would be so invested in him winning and not wanting him to go to WWE that they would eat it up. And then you would have a real storyline that would get Jon Moxley real heat. It would work, because then you could have Ricky Stark showing up in WWE before you announce the Kenny match. Yeah. You'd have Miro probably just sticking around playing video games. I don't think that guy really wants to work anywhere. Malachi Black.
I think Tony needs to fire people.
Yes.
Just holding on to talent. And it's so weird because WWE, a lot of their evil deeds have been playing out in public. Right now, it almost seems like WWE has the moral high ground, especially with the way that they brought in Penta, because Penta was kind of on ice for a little bit, and they brought him in, and now he's like this big star. They're really showcasing him like he's this big main event talent, and we'll see where it leads. I don't think that the momentum is going to stick around for too long, although I'm a huge Penta fan, and I hope it does. But he very likely is to go down the card eventually, right? So, but right now, look, they have the moral high ground in AEW, which is as bizarre as it sounds, given everything that they've, all the controversies they've had. Holding on to Ricky Starks, Phoenix, and Miro is doing him no favors at this point. And that's part of the perception war that he's losing. He's losing the moral high ground to an evil company.
Yeah.
And so I think that if he does this and then lets those guys go, and then you don't have Phoenix on Twitter posting a picture of him in a straitjacket.
Yeah.
You know, and they've stripped all of his merch money too. They're no longer selling his merch on the website. So now he's just sitting at home, still getting paid a lot of money to sit at
best
home.
Best job in the world.
Yeah.
Absolute best job in the world.
Right. Which I'm like thankful. Like I wish I could have that job.
Absolutely.
Ricky Starks, by the way, he's going around doing indies. He was at House of Glory last night and a big fuck TK chant broke out while he was there. It was reported a long time ago, I think, by Sean Ross Sapp or something, but it's the story just resurfaced that Ricky Starks has asked for his AEW release, but Tony Khan turned him down. He's not been used on TV. So he's essentially being frozen out after expressing his desire to leave. Starks and Big Bill were supposed to split as a tag team with Starks turning babyface, but AEW never followed through. Tony Khan's approach, if someone isn't happy with creative and isn't a top star, he just simply stops using them and stops talking to them too, by the way, which is not cool.
Which is another thing that's been a big issue in AEW is just the lack of communication with guys.
Yeah.
They just like start ghosting people, whether it's their contracts coming up and they just stop talking to them, don't give them a heads up on anything, or they have no creative for them and they just don't communicate that with them or try to work with them on something else.
Yeah. Guantanamo Bay is absolutely hilarious. So yeah. there was one about Triple H. I can't remember. There was a good one about Triple H too.
Yeah.
There's another situation kind of rearing its ugly head, and we're going to tread lightly on this one. But Britt Baker, we're not going to get into some of the more personal stuff, but so she's currently not being used in AEW. Wade Keller was speculating earlier this week on his podcast that he speculated that she might not ever come back, but he never reported that she wasn't ever coming back.
And
I think that's the difference. Aggregators are stupid, or they're purposely and willfully being ignorant and trying to manipulate the situation. So it got out there, aggregator after aggregator, dipshit after dipshit was reporting that Wade Keller said that she's not coming back, which is not true. He never said that, but it's definitely true that she's not being used right now for whatever reason. Dave reported that issues with other women in the locker room related to MJF Alicia Tate situation months ago, which we talked about here. We don't need to relitigate that. But her future remains uncertain. Mercedes Moné is now, so Baker was the face of the division, but Mercedes Moné is essentially, got brought in and has taken over as the face of the company. And then of course, Conan went on his podcast and accused her of cheating on Adam Cole, but Britt Baker has since said, no, that's not true. I don't know why anybody would report that anyway. It's like, that has nothing to do with anything. Even if she did, even if it were true, why would you even talk about it in public? It's kind of a dumb thing to say. Conan, however, not taking any heat for it. Unfortunately, my buddy, friend of the show, been on the podcast several times, Ibu, said something similar to that effect without outright reporting it, but kind of insinuated that. Now he's taking all the heat. And the reason why that is because Ibu actually cares and feels bad, so people feel like they can dogpile him. But only cowards jump in dogpiles, right? A real man will actually send somebody a DM or an email or pick them up and help them, recover and shake things off. And so for everybody that's dogpiling on EB, why don't you just back the fuck up? Right. Yeah. The guy made a mistake. He's going to be just fine. But, that whole thing is out there. I am curious to see whether or not she will actually ever return, because, it's kind of the way it's been going in AEW. Like Camille, she was just there, and I don't know what the hell happened to her. I think she just had a bad match, and like they just like sent her home and never brought her back.
I think it was just one of those things. They just decided they didn't want Mercedes to have like a bodyguard type thing, and then they just kind of wrote it off. They decided they weren't going to do anything with that story, and then just kind of wrote it off and have nothing else for her.
She did have Camille had a match with Queen Aminata, and it was a stinker. Yeah. So it was bad. So, and like they just kind of lost faith in her. It's kind of that's just my read on the situation. I don't know that for a fact.
So I do know Britt Baker was on DDP's yoga channel on YouTube, or whatever he does. And I guess they talked a little bit or quite a bit about WWE on there. I didn't watch the full video, so I'm not going to like say what was said, but I know there was WWE chatter. Yeah. And it wasn't long after that like more talk started coming about her not wanting to be there, maybe wanting to jump ship. I think Sean Ross Sapp may have reported she has around a year and a half left on her deal. So wherever she wants to be, she's probably going to be with AEW for the next year and a half, because he's not going to release her. Maybe she can go find Jungle Boy and punch him in the face, see if that works. It worked for one guy, so why not try it again?
Well, I mean, it didn't work for Andrade. He slapped.
Yeah.
He slapped.
So you can't Sammy punch him. Yeah, you gotta choke him a little. That's what CM Punk said. He didn't hit him. He just choked him a little. Right. So.
And then you got to threaten Tony Khan's life while he's
in a position. You got to make him fear for his life.
Yeah.
Not knock over any computer monitors. I don't know how those monitors didn't get knocked over.
I think WWE takes Britt Baker in a heartbeat if she ever comes available.
I absolutely think they would. She would. I don't know if she would go straight to NXT, but she's somebody who, at least on TV, carries herself well. She speaks confidently, and she has a good look. I think they could do a lot with that.
She's a big star. I personally am not a fan of what she does in the ring. I think I've maybe seen two good Britt Baker matches, but I also fully acknowledge that she's a star, right? Yeah. And if she comes out today on AEW, she's getting one of the biggest reactions of the night, regardless of who else is on the show. She's a big star. So I think WWE would take her in a heartbeat, and I think it would be foolish of them to send her to NXT first. I think she would have to be like main roster bound.
Yeah. Yeah. They could absolutely use her. They need more depth on the main roster. And she's got plenty of reps. You know, she's wrestled for quite a while now. She's been in AEW, 5-6 years now?
Since day one. She was the first ever female signing of the company.
Yeah, and she's somebody I could absolutely see. I think she lives down there in Florida. She'd probably be training with Natty and TJ quite a bit, getting extra reps in. I think the only concern they would have with WWE is how much of her practice does she want to give up? Because, you know, she is still like I think full-time, maybe just part-time practicing dentist. And if she wants to continue that, that might kind of, you know, hamper how much interest they would have in her. But if she's willing to scale that back a bit, they would absolutely love everything else about her.
Yeah. Caesar in the chat. I know that Ibu said a lot of things. Ibu's my friend. And I'm not going to take this time to dogpile on him. Mm-hmm. He is going to have a statement coming out soon. And so he will defend himself. I was just talking about that situation with Conan specifically. I know he said other stuff, and I'm not going to talk about it here because he's going to talk about it tomorrow. But I don't. If you're my friend, I got your back, unless I can't have your back whatsoever, right? So unless like it's so egregious that I just can't. But he knows what he did was wrong, and some of the things he said was wrong, and he's going to address it himself. So you're not going to find me out there dogpiling one of my friends. I'm just not going to do it. The guy is. The guy has been on my show twice here, and then he also came on one of my TNA podcasts, and he didn't have to do that, right? I'm like small potatoes compared to the numbers he's bringing over. So I'm always going to appreciate that, and we've had some good conversations in the past. So if those of you want to come here to hear somebody like beat up on him, I don't do that shit. Not to my friends. That stuff don't work for me. So if you guys want that, there's other podcasts that are going to go do that. Some other sanctimonious jagoffs are going to be out there being holier than thou and try to dogpile the guy, kick him when he's down, put their foot on his neck. I'm not doing that. That shit I don't do that stuff. So, I'll do it to Vince McMahon, but he's a billionaire.
Yeah. Well,
I'm not going to do that to other podcasters. That's just not how I roll.
Yeah. One thing that, you know, Transferring Heat points out, you know, she has a good relationship with Chelsea Green, and also has a good relationship with Triple H. Yeah. But another thing to keep in mind, Britt Baker went to plenty of NXT shows. She was dating Adam Cole the entire time he was in NXT.
Did she do the Mae Young Classic when that was going around?
I don't think she did the Mae Young. Okay. I know there was a lot of stuff that the big spot in War Games with Adam Cole. Well, the drop into the ladder, into the tables, and they got her on camera, the reaction, and a lot of people were kind of up in arms about that.
When she signed with AEW, you would have thought that she would have been someone that WWE would have signed, but I take it the reason why they didn't is because she didn't want to give up her dental practice, right? Yeah. I mean, she kind of has like what they like at the time, what they were looking for, right?
Yeah.
Her ring skills weren't up there, but she was a lot better than people they were signing at the time.
Yeah. But when you signed NXT, it's a 40-50 hour a week job, you know?
Yeah.
You're going to be in classes, you're in promo classes, you're watching old matches, you're doing in ring work. Right. And she just, you know, she didn't want to have that kind of schedule, and more power to her. You know, she wanted to have a healthy relationship with the career that she first had in mind and this new love of wrestling that she had found. So yeah. I totally don't fault her for that. But yeah, she's been in that NXT locker room. I'm sure she has relationships there.
Oh, yeah. Transferring Heat says, according to her, that was the reason. Nathan worked. She said she worked dark matches during the Mae Young Classic. Okay. That makes sense. So, yeah, I think there's a connection there. So, yeah,
if the WWE Vault starts releasing one or two of those dark matches, that will get people up in arms. I kind of hope they do that just for the fit.
All right. So I watched a lot of wrestling this week, far more wrestling than I ever intended to watch. I watched obviously Genesis. I already did a podcast about that. I watched Raw this week, and I meant to do a podcast on Patreon. I had done two in a row. I was going to do the third one, but I just couldn't get to it. The schedule just wouldn't allow it. So I ended up not doing a Raw reaction show this week. But I watched Raw, and then Wednesday I watched Dynamite. Thursday I watched Impact because I have the TNA podcast. So I'm never going to miss Impact, right? And then Saturday I watched Saturday Night's Main Event. And then I just continue to have the TV to myself. So I actually watched Collision. So let's go ahead and talk about Saturday Night's Main Event, man. You know what? That's an easy watch. Like, especially if you have the cock, you put it on and it's like, you know, maybe 90 minutes, you know, because they cut out the commercials, like maybe 95 minutes. Mm-hmm. 2 hours if you watch live. But, you know, if you have the commercial free like I do, it's a really easy watch. I thought the matches were like good. I thought the main event was great. I've never really watched a Yeet match that I thought was like, yeah, this is a great match. But I thought him and Gunther ruled. I thought that was
as a really singles good match at least.
I like, and if you were to watch Saturday Night's Main Event side by side with Collision, and Collision's there at Daly's Place, it's freezing outside. There's only 3,000 people. And then versus them in San Antonio with 15,000 people and the crowd going apeshit. You like one is completely hot in a priority watch, and the other one is just kind of like you must really like wrestling if you're watching it.
Yeah.
So, what did you think of Saturday Night's Main Event?
So, I thought it was a fun show. Like I said, there was nothing bad on it. I know some people I had seen were kind of upset that Kevin Owens took the Sweet Chin Music. They're like, well, that's a way to build up a guy right before a title match, which I get. But I will say to that, if you've listened to Kevin Owens talk at any point in the last few years, he begs Shawn Michaels for a match every single year at WrestleMania. He said every year around February or March, he hits Shawn Michaels up. And Shawn Michaels always has an excuse. He says he's pretty sure HBK scheduled a surgery 1 year specifically to blow him off. So I wouldn't doubt if the Sweet Chin Music wasn't Kevin Owens' idea. I could be wrong on that, but that's something I could see him coming up with. He probably wanted to take it. But aside from that, the show was just fun. There was nothing great, but nothing bad. I do think on these Saturday night's main events, they need to have something important happen. Because if you're a WWE fan and you skip the show, you're not missing anything. Like nothing is going to happen that'll set up Raw or SmackDown or the Royal Rumble. You know, they did the contract signing, but even again, there was nothing storyline-wise that would change from Saturday night's main event. I probably would have had Sheamus take the Intercontinental title.
I completely agree.
Yeah, just to say, like, hey, like, there is a reason you should go out of your way to watch this show live because something might happen. They did have Chelsea Green win the United States title on the first one. That was the end of the tournament. I probably would have had the women's Intercontinental one end on this one. There was still a couple weeks, but I probably would have scheduled it to line up that way. But you got to have something important happen for people to still go out of their way to watch this show. Gunther versus Jay was very good. I really enjoyed just about everything on this show. I thought Jesse was better this time than the last time. He, you know, sounded
you know what?
A little bit
so
better.
With Jesse, I'm glad you brought him up. I have always loved Jesse the Body Ventura. When he was a kid, when I was a kid, he was my favorite commentator. Mm-hmm. Not his WCW stuff, but his WWF stuff specifically. I just thought it was great. Big fan of Predator and The Running Man. As any man should be. Those movies are awesome.
Conspiracy theory with Jesse Ventura on True TV. I used to watch
that. I love
that time.
Show and I wish it would come back. I've read two of his books. And so I just happen to be a big fan of him. Like not only like in professional wrestling, but just like personally, I'm just a big fan of Jesse. Right.
Yeah.
He's crazy, but that's kind of like, he's interesting. Right.
Right.
He's a Navy SEAL. So I respect that about him. I just got a lot of respect for the guy. But he hadn't been on wrestling doing like anything like full time in 35, almost 40 years. So he comes back, and he was a, like, for the first Saturday Night's Main Event, he was a little charged up, kind of missed some of his lines. And on commentary, it took him a while to get settled in, but he got settled in. It felt like this week he was way more prepared, and he knew knew more of what was going on. Although he did miss some stuff, I think he's going to continue to miss some stuff. The guy's in his 70s, and he's Jesse Ventura, right? So we got to give him like some slack there. He doesn't have to be an expert on everything. But I thought he was great on the show, and I love the way that they're using him. Just do the intro with Tessitore. Halfway through, do another one there at the Oakland position, and then commentate one match. I think that's the perfect use of Jesse the Body Ventura in 2025.
Yeah, so a funny Jesse Ventura kind of Ventura story. So when you lived across the street from me and I was a young kid, remember, I used to go steal either the Undertaker tape or WrestleMania 13, specifically because Undertaker won the title on WrestleMania 13. And I remember going to ask for WrestleMania 13 one time, and you told me, you've seen this thing too many damn times. Here, go educate yourself. And you handed me a Jesse Ventura videotape. That was my introduction to Jesse Ventura.
Yeah.
I thought it was funny all night. Pat McAfee kept calling him Mr. Body. I don't know if you got that. He kept calling him Mr. Body. So I thought that was great. But yeah, I thought he was good. I thought they had a bit more chemistry because that was the first time he had worked with those guys, you know, in the first one. So yeah, I think he'll get better. I thought him really pumping up Sheamus and how the referee didn't see Breaker's foot get on the rope, so he should have still counted the three, I thought was hilarious. And then he put that picture out with Sheamus on Twitter, or Sheamus put the picture out with him on Twitter later. So maybe that builds up a story. I don't know. Probably not, but we'll see.
Well, Jesse was always good at being right, even though he was a heel. And he was always pointing out the referee's flaws. And he was always the one that was right on Hogan, because Hogan in his matches would always cheat. And Jesse would correctly point that out. And they would always piss off Gorilla Monsoon and Vince McMahon on commentary.
Yeah.
But he was always right. Like, look at him. He's trading McMahon. Yeah. So I like that he's still doing that. I like the throwback aspect. I like seeing the legends around ringside. That was really cool. So Rhea Ripley defeats Nia Jax to retain the WWE Women's World title. You know, this had like a 2-week build. I didn't think that it would end up getting as much heat as it got. But you
fans
know,
are just
Rhea Ripley is incredibly over, more over than I honestly thought that she was. And, Nia Jax is a good heel. I didn't think the match was particularly all that good. They didn't really do a ton, but that was so heated. Like, how could you like say anything bad about it?
Yeah, they did. Rhea did a code red on Nia, and I didn't think that was something I would ever see. And it looked okay. Nia took the big bump for her, but yeah, like when the fans are genuinely invested in a winner and a loser, it can come off 10 times better than the actual work ever should have been. And I thought that's what would
I don't think. If you watch this show, I don't think anybody in their right mind thought that Nia Jax had a chance in hell of winning the match.
No.
But I mean, you know, but she was being built up as, you know, on SmackDown for a long time. She was a champion for a while. And so she did beat a lot of people as like a monster, but still, if you're just like a wrestling fan, you know that Rhea Ripley's not losing this match. But look, I don't know. Look, they didn't do much, but whatever they did worked. I did like that spot with the code red. I thought that was good. Probably one of the better, like the second, you know what? I kind of go back and forth, but Bron Breakker defeats Sheamus for the Intercontinental title. I agree. This one probably should have flipped over to Sheamus. I thought Jesse pointing out that if Sheamus wins this, he's a lock for the Hall of Fame. I thought was a good angle to bring up because he's won all the other titles, but he has not won this one. And so him being a, whatever, a Grand Slam champion would have made him, like a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
So I liked that aspect of it. I thought they beat the piss out of each other. Mm-hmm. Thought they had the big spears and all the stuff and the hitting and.
So
I thought it was a good match.
The one spot in particular, the one where Breakker got his foot on the rope, as soon as he started teasing the spear, it was one of those things where if you know, when you watch WWE, you can kind of predict what's going to happen the way they set up the matches. And as soon as he started teasing the spear, I was like, oh, that's going to be the big near fall count right there. Like Sheamus is going to hit him with the brogue and the fans are totally going to buy like that. That was it. The way Breakker sold it, I don't know if you paid attention, but he kind of like went stiff. Like a guy would when he gets knocked out in the UFC, like a really hard knockout. He went stiff and like made Sheamus push him over. I thought was a fantastic sell for a guy who's only been doing this, I think, 4 years, maybe 5 years.
Yeah. And I think probably within a couple of years, we're looking at like Bron Breakker's world heavyweight champion, right? Like,
yeah,
like him and Fatu, and Fatu has been around a while, but him and Fatu and Obafemi and Trick Williams is going to get there. I think Trick is really going to be something.
Trick has really come on in terms of his in-ring work. He had really the matches with Ilya progressed him far more than I ever thought he would be, but he's just another guy who's so freaking over, man. He's got just charisma oozing out of him.
Yeah. So I thought the match was really fun. But I like those types of matches. Mm. Antonio Baker, do you think they stopped showing him once he said WWF? No, they're not mad at Jesse. Like you can't, like, no one ever stays mad at Jesse Ventura. Jesse Ventura, the first thing he did when they showed him on camera was to bury a Republican, Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas. And WWE is ran by Republicans who are like Trump's, who like friends with Donald Trump. The first thing he did was bury Greg Abbott. I don't think he's going anywhere. I think he adds to the show. I don't know that they're drawing any ratings on this stuff. I know the last time it was like about what, like SmackDown does.
But. Yeah, it was like 1.4, 1.5, and a claim of 600,000 on Peacock.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, just like Dynamite gets a million on Max. Saturday Night's Main Event got 600,000 on Peacock. Well, I will say to both arguments, I do watch Dynamite on Max now, and I do watch Saturday Night's Main Event on Peacock, which actually worked out to my advantage because I actually turned it on NBC at first, and it was in Spanish. Like the commentary was in Spanish, so I flipped it over to Peacock, and it was like perfect the whole night.
Yeah, I had that issue too. Thankfully, people in the Discord let me know because I started it about 40 minutes late, and people in Discord was like, "Just it'll be fine. It goes away in a second." I thought something had gone wrong with my YouTube TV.
Yeah. So I watched like the first 30 minutes live, and then I had to stop it, and then I ended up going back like after the kids went to bed, and then I picked it back up. So let's see, Antonio Baker correcting me. Thank you, sir. No, I think it was 94. Or 93 when he's last worked regular. He did, so that's when he stopped WCW in 1994. But he did come back for a short, well, like after he became governor, he came back to SummerSlam in Minnesota. And then I think him and Vince McMahon in like the early 2000s did like one match together as like an announced crew. So they brought him back.
Yeah, he did a couple things in the mid 2000s. They did like a retro Raw, and that he did, maybe Retro Raw, or when he was like the guest GM when they were doing the guest GM thing, and he went there to promote his conspiracy theory TV show.
Yeah, which I love that show. All right, Braun Strowman, defeats Jacob Fatu by DQ. One would think if you're just looking at the results that Braun Strowman won the match.
Yeah,
but in fact he got his ass whooped. And I actually got into, so I looked at that and I was like, are they writing off Braun Strowman again? I know they're putting over Jacob Fatu, and that's very clear. Mm-hmm. And I think that he is going to be the guy like down the road. Like they're setting him up for like a big push, right?
Yeah.
He's already actually getting a big push, but I think they're setting him up for like a big match with one of their top stars, right? But I watched that and Fatu got disqualified for just being too awesome. He just kept hitting him with his ass over and over again.
I got to contest the result of that match. If Jacob Fatu should hire a lawyer and contest the result, because he went to do the move before the referee disqualified him, and the referee stopped him and said he's done.
Yeah.
Braun Strowman should have lost by KO. Jacob Fatu knocked him out.
Yeah.
So he should contest the results of the match. But anyway, continue.
And you know what? If Jesse were on commentary, he would have pointed that out like a Roman.
I was watching it. And I was thinking, man, like this would be a perfect thing for Ventura.
Instead, we got that clown Cole and Pat McAfee. It was they're actually a pretty good commentary team, but so he just kept hitting him with his ass, and then security comes down, and he's like, "Screw security," and he just keeps doing.
He murdered that one guy with the chair.
Yeah, he just like did the Sabu chair toss. Braun Strowman's coughing up blood. I think he does a stretcher job to get him out of there. And I don't know, it looked to me like they're writing off Strowman, but somebody tried to correct me and say, well, no, Strowman technically won the match. So now they could do a rematch. And I'm like, dude, this is like Mike Tyson versus Trevor Burbick in like 1986. Tyson gets the second round knockout, beats him by death. It's like saying, oh, well, you know, he had a shot, so he didn't lose in the first round, so let's give him another shot.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Strowman's at this point where like his knees are so rough right now. He's just not moving well for like
They got to stop with the choo-choo train. I know they no longer do the train noises, but he's moving around that ring so slow, and he hit that move three times. Third time, Fatu picks him up and tried to put him through a table, but that table's made out of fucking titanium or something.
Yeah. But, yeah, the new tables are super sturdy for some reason. But it's the same thing they did when they wanted to get Bronson Reed over. Right. Just go out there and murder somebody. And yeah. The problem that they might have, similar to AEW, is Jacob Fatu is supposed to be a heel. But if you listen to that crowd, he's not. Like,
so
that,
when what heels need to remember is, like, when they say one more time, that is your cue to not do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he's already killed the guy. Mm-hmm. Now the crowd wants you to keep doing it because your moonsault is awesome. Probably the best moonsault in all of pro wrestling. And, like, at least definitely the most devastating at this point.
Yeah.
So they kept saying, like, do it again. And he was doing it again to much to their delight. And it's like, well, if you're a heel, you should say, screw you guys. I'm not getting paid to do extra moonsaults, and just walk out.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, but it got them over. Maybe they just take that as their opportunity to say, screw it. We're just going to make him a face. This guy's incredibly over. But there is a point where you have too many faces. You do need the bad guy. Like, you need a heel. But I really hope he gets a big match. I think I immediately text you and I was like, screw stories. Like, screw how we get there. Bron Breakker versus Jacob Fatu at WrestleMania. Like, yeah. Have it open the show and just tell everybody else, try to follow it.
And like, they only need 10 minutes. They don't need to do 1,000 kickouts for 30 minutes. Give these guys 10, let them beat the piss out of each other. Well, yeah. Nathan brings up a good point. Says, Jesse burying the Steiners during Breakers match popped me. Well, I just got a text from John Muse. He said, Scott Steiner has returned fire on Jesse. This is a tweet from Scott Steiner. He says, Jesse Ventura seems to forget that I attended a highly educated university. Next time I see him, there's a 141 2/3 chance that I'll slap him like a bitch. His Navy SEAL training can't help him. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. So Scotty Steiner getting in on the fun there, threatening Jesse Ventura. You got to be careful with old Jesse. He'll sue your ass. You don't care. Like, he sued a dead guy.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. I love Jesse, man. And I'm so glad to have him back in wrestling.
He won the suit against the dead guy.
Yeah. So.
All right. And then we get to the main event. Gunther defeated Jey Uso. I thought this match was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Gunther is so good. He is everything that I want to see in a pro wrestler. He just slaps and beats the piss out of people. The finish, if, like, conventional thinking, one would think that was kind of like a, like, not a really exciting finish, because he just kind of came out of nowhere with the powerbomb and just kind of laid on top of him. I thought, like, and I was like, no, that's kind of what Gunther does. Like, I think that type of finish, like, he's not trying to get you with the exciting finish. That's what babyfaces do. Gunther just wants to beat the piss out of you until you can't walk anymore. And that's kind of what happened here. After he kicked out of everything Jey threw at him, he just hit him with a powerbomb and walked out.
So Gunther does that a lot in big matches. The most famous one of his, I would say, is the Tyler Bate one in NXT UK, when Tyler Bate kicked out at one. And the crowd just went nuts for it. And then it's just one more move and Gunther put him away. He wants to give you the big pop and then take it away almost immediately.
Yeah. Is Tyler Bate still around?
He had, what was it, triceps surgery?
Okay.
Yeah, so he was a team with Pete Dunne for a little bit. Yeah. That was back in, like, September that he tore his, either his triceps or pec. He had something in that general area.
He tore his tri-tip.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That kid was pretty good. I thought he was going to be something one day, but
he stayed in NXT probably far too long. Yeah. He's still a young guy. I think he's only like 25 or 26 still.
Yeah.
He was over in the UK for too long. Didn't want to come to America for the longest time. I think he's a guy that, if he comes back as a heel with Pete Dunne, they can really help the tag division. But
he was a good babyface in the NXT UK tournament. He's tiny, unfortunately, and I think that's
his match versus the then Walter that won in NXT UK is maybe a top five match all time for me. They beat the living shit out of each other.
Yeah, transferring. He says he's supposed to be back soon. I believe that was reported this week. Well, I hope he does come back. I think he's a pretty good wrestler, like Tyler Bate. Yeah,
he could come back with Pete Dunne and let them be heels for a little bit. Raw needs more tag teams. They're actually starting to tell stories with the tag division on SmackDown, and involving more than just like two tag teams at a time. Raw needs that, but they need more bodies for it.
They what they need is a reunion of Ethan Page and Josh Alexander on Raw. And I think the North versus the what are they called? War Machine.
Yeah.
What are they called?
War Raiders right now.
War Raiders. Yeah.
Yeah.
They need the North versus the War Raiders. That should be the top tag team feud on Raw. I think that would rule.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. And yeah. You know, even I do think the heel New Day is starting to work. Those guys are getting some good.
Dude. New Day's heels is kind of over. Like,
yeah, and I think
some of it is kind of like, you know, the fans just kind of playing along because they just love these guys, so they just kind of want to like help them be heels. But yeah. I also think there's like some there's actually like really good heels too.
They did it the only way they could get real heat on those guys. I don't think those guys could have turned any other way and gotten heat aside from turning on Big E.
Yeah,
like the way they did it, I thought was genuine. But I will say, Xavier Woods has been saying for at least a year now that he wanted to be a heel. I should have seen it coming, but yeah. he had plans for being a heel. I didn't think they would ever pull the trigger. He didn't think the company would ever let him do it. More power to him, because I think it's working.
Well, I think it was the right time because they had kind of gotten themselves into
very stale. Yeah. There just wasn't anything new they could do with where they were at. And a lot of people are saying like, oh, them turning on Big E means Big E's definitely coming back. Don't hold your breath on that one.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what that means. I think that was their opportunity to say that Big E's not coming back. Those guys still want to work. They had to find something new to do. I wouldn't doubt if they changed the name as well.
Gotcha. Last couple of news stories. Corey Graves was, he kind of was upset.
Back on NXT.
He got demoted down to NXT. So they suspended him for a week. They didn't let him call Raw this past week. And he's back on NXT saying, there's no place I'd rather be.
Nowhere else I'd rather be.
Saw what the unemployment line looked like and the fact that AEW is very likely not to bring his ass over. And he's like, you know what, Papa H, why don't you let me come home?
Yep. It was like, well, you don't want to work for the third most watched wrestling show. How about possibly the sixth? Because TNA is probably your only other option.
And I think that he would have been a big upgrade over Matthew Raywalt.
If he is. Corey Graves can genuinely be one of the best announcers in wrestling. When he wants to be, there are some times where he's just terrible, but when he's telling stories, I thought
when he was on like the heyday of NXT, like the black and gold brand, Full Sail University, like that heyday, I thought he was excellent. And then he got called up to the main roster and I think Vince ruined him. Vince ruined him. And I have not heard him like be that great since then.
When he's telling stories for his friends, like the Cody Rhodes, Seth Rollins match, the Hell in a Cell, he was excellent in that one.
You know what? I do remember that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Specifically his line, an angel with a broken wing descended down from heaven to win this match was his, little nod to Kenny Omega. I thought was great. His wrestling history knowledge is probably the best of the announcers that they have right now.
Yeah. Especially since JBL's gone, because JBL was always good at that.
Corey very much kept up with everything wrestling outside of WWE and still does to this day. He'll post on his Instagram of him watching like New Japan or Noah. He brought up Pro Wrestling Noah, I believe, on this past week's NXT. So he can be really good when he's not announcing for his wife. And he admitted, that, he sees what fans, like when Booker talks about Roxanne, he's like, man, this is what fans must feel like when I'm announcing for my wife or something like that. So he's self-aware in that point, at least.
Speaking of Noah, Omos, he's gone.
I hate that. He's
giving the title to Daga.
Hate that so much.
Yeah. What? So I think like my initial thought is that is a WWE call. But I don't think they would care one way or the other if Omos got pinned to Noah.
No.
Yeah. So no, I think Noah just wants to bring him back and keep him strong. So they're just like, okay, well, we're just going to give the title to Daga. Completely shitting on their own titles. Yeah. Noah can be kind of a mess at times. And so I think that sucks. I think Omos just stayed in for 6 months. He's coming back too soon.
He was incredibly over there. Yeah. Like just seeing the guy all over, not even just in Noah, he was all over Japan. And I'd seen like streamers would stop him on the street. Everybody wanted to take a picture with him. The guy is just incredible in terms of like what he is as a public relations guy. Yeah. He handles media very well. I think they're probably bringing him back to do a Rumble spot. I wouldn't be surprised to see him on something on WrestleMania. I don't know what it is. I wish he would have stayed there longer because he seemed to be doing pretty well and getting good work in.
Yeah. Like he's never going to be like a great worker, but I thought that he just fit in Noah. And I thought the guys just kind of running into him and bouncing off of him was kind of a cool visual. And they made him feel like he was the biggest star in Japan. So he felt really important there. So I was like, why would you ruin that? Just stay. Like, I don't know whose call it is to make him leave, but
they
got the belt off him, but gave it to Daga. And I'm just like, what a waste. Yeah.
I wonder if there's any worry of visas with him staying in Japan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know how that works. When I was there, I was on military orders, so I got to stay 2 years. But
I wonder if there's
military orders were over. That was part of the status of forces agreement. I had to like leave the country. immediately once my orders expired. But I was there on military orders, so it's a little bit different. But
So I do wonder if there's maybe some concerns from WWE side about any visa getting messed up or just slowing down, because there's a lot of stuff going on with visas and immigration right now.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that was some concern of like, let's just go ahead and get them back here and not have to worry about that.
Right. They have an in with that administration. So I think if they run into any issues, they can call up old Senator Rubio.
Yeah.
The new Secretary of State.
They do have a WWE Hall of Famer.
They do.
On speed dial.
So yeah.
They could just call him up on the golf course. Like, hey, take care of this for us.
All right. Let's close the show with some TNA talk. I know we got some TNA fans in the chat. So if you got some TNA, if you want to get your TNA takes, let us have them. Joe, you watched TNA Impact this week. They went live on Thursday night. I covered it in detail. I covered all the TNA news for 90 minutes. So I'm not going to talk too much about it. But actually, before we get to the TNA Impact talk, what do you think of TNA going to Full Sail and doing a series of tapings? Do you think that they're going to do more? Well, like, what's your read on that situation?
I really hope it goes well. I hope Full Sail can help them with their production stuff. That was a big thing for NXT, is like the Full Sail students just kind of did everything for them, and the production always came off very well because of it. Whether it's cheap labor or free labor, I don't know exactly how that works, but I hope that can help out TNA, because one of my biggest complaints every time I watched them was specifically like the backstage interviews that looked all very white and washed out, kind of like stuff you would see in high school AV club. So like maybe Full Sail can help them with that. Orlando is a very hot wrestling town. I don't know about the TNA wrestlers, but I do know a lot of wrestlers live there just because easy airport access. They're all Disney adults.
A lot of TNA wrestlers came straight from the WWE pipeline. So
yeah,
they got fired by either NXT or the main roster.
Right. True. I think Full Sail is a great spot for them. I'm glad they didn't do the PC, because they do that, since there's like hardly any parking there, they do that whole thing where they bus people in,
which is
sometimes it's so dumb.
I would never go to a show at the PC if I had to get on a bus. That just wouldn't happen.
You got to park like on an offsite parking lot, and then they bus you in. Yeah. I guess that probably does keep people a little bit safer, because that NXT parking lot is the most dangerous place in America. So you probably have a little bit better control there. But man, as an NXT fan, so many great moments happened at Full Sail University. One of my favorite ones of Bo Dallas running away from security when he was supposed to be getting kicked out of NXT, and like all the Full Sail students like watching it being filmed, having no idea what the hell's going on. Hopefully TNA can recreate some of that magic.
I think they could. They have a lot of former, like from that era, like one of their top feuds right now is Steve Macklin versus Eric Young with like two like alums from the Full Sail era. So Sean says TNA Impact live show looked top notch and felt like a big time wrestling show. I agree. I thought it looked great on TV. And so you brought up, getting help with the production. It's no coincidence that Genesis was in Dallas the night before Raw, and that Impact was in San Antonio on Thursday and Friday night before Saturday night's main event. WWE have been kind of big brothering them a little bit with some of their production stuff. So that's been kind of part of the partnership. They've been helping out with that, not like directing the show, but kind of like helping them. Right. Because they fired Scott D'Amore. One of the reasons why they fired him is because the production looks just so bad, and he would not get rid of his production team. So they fired him, and then they fired the head of production, Dave Sahadi. and they fired their live events coordinator, Lou DeAngeli. And since then, the productions look better and the live events have gotten bigger. Coincidence? I don't know. But the people that they hired from within. And so part of this relationship is that WWE has been kind of like guiding their production a little bit. And so I think that's another reason why they're going to Full Sail. Not only can they leverage the students that are there, but WWE's next door, right? There's like right down the road. So they can kind of help have offset some of those production issues. The production since September has looked top notch, with exception to Turning Point in November, because they utilized a local independent promotion for that. But I mean, I think it's looked off the charts, and this week's Impact was the best looking Impact that I've seen since they were on Spike TV. For real.
You know, and I will say, like, watching Genesis last week, immediately coming on the air, I think the first thing I said was like, oh, this is what Michael always wanted. Like, good sized crowd, lit up, plenty of energy. Like,
yes.
TNA really needs that. I thought the crowd on Thursday night was good. I do hate the way the tag match went, and I did predict it when I was, called into your show.
Fraxium and Rascals, you're talking about.
Yes, yeah, for the NXT tag title match. I knew that Wesley and his boys were going to get involved and cause a screwy finish. And it sounds like that'll set up Wesley and his boys probably getting involved with the Rascals again and doing a story from there, because they never really got to finish it because Trey Miguel got hurt, I believe.
Yeah, so I think that what we're looking at is the Rascals and Ace Austin versus Wesley, and I cannot remember the name of the two guys that he's working with.
Nathan Frazier.
No.
Oh, Wesley, Tyreek and Tyson, is it?
Tyson and Tyreek, that's right.
Yeah.
I think trios match at Vengeance Day coming up, because TNA does not have a live, like, kind of pay-per-view style, like TNA Plus event. They don't have one in February, so I think that they're going to be sending their talent to Vengeance Day to be doing stuff like that. So I think that's where we get Masha Slamovich and Cora Jade. And we get the trios match and probably some more matches with TNA stars.
Yeah.
But you liked TNA Impact.
So
your first time watching, like, what else, like, what was good? What was bad?
So the one thing I don't understand, like, so they had Josh Alexander out there trying to give that, promo, putting over TNA, putting over his time there. And the fans just did not give a shit. They were just shitting all over. And I know they were trying to do it. They were trying to get Josh Alexander over as the leaving babyface who gave his all to the company, so the heel turn for the tag team would get over more.
Right.
It felt like a miss because those fans just shit all over his promo the whole time.
Well, because Josh has been the top heel in the company since July. Yeah. Right. And they didn't really do anything to turn him babyface.
Yeah.
So we'll see. So they continued the story at the tapings. Josh is out. They did the whole thing. Well, they had his final match at the taping the night afterwards. And like all the whole roster came out, carried him on the shoulders. I mean, look, he's one of the great wrestlers in TNA history.
Yeah.
For sure. So that totally didn't get over. What were your thoughts on SDL coming out as 23 and getting so if you don't know, she got the digital media title in the divorce, because in storyline she was married to PCO.
Yeah. So I remember texting you and like, oh, it's like Sami Callihan's definitely 23. Because when they play the video, it does sound like his voice.
Right.
And I'd read online that the original plan was for him to be 23 and to turn on PCO.
I don't know if that's true or not, but that is a rumor that I've been starting.
Yeah.
Sorry, my son just made a cameo.
Okay. So,
time for me to go here in a minute. So,
it was
Steph DeLander and Mance Warner out to literally no reaction.
No reaction. Whatsoever. I did hate how DeLander just came out and was like, yep, I'm 23, by the way. and I'm the digital media champion. I got it. Yeah. I did think saying that she got it in the divorce, I thought was funny.
Yeah.
That's a great way to switch a title. Like, oh, like she won it in the divorce. That makes okay.
Yeah. Yeah. She won it in the divorce. I was like, oh, you know what? She actually was kind of making a little bit of sense. I could see that happening. Like if you like win a Heisman trophy and you get divorced, I think your wife could probably take it. Right. So
yeah,
it makes sense.
Absolutely.
and Mance Warner's a real life boyfriend. Before we go, we got one more comment I'm going to get to from Transferring Heat, but Joe Hendry as the TNA champion, he defended the title against Matt Cardona. What did you think of the match, and what do you think of like just Cardona kind of coming in and being the challenger there?
I love the fact that I got to spoil that for you.
Yes.
I really did think that you were watching live. I didn't think about the fact that you were probably still working.
Yeah. Well, I was actually off, but I was doing stuff with the family. Like it's like 3 p.m. when it comes on here. So
yeah. Yeah. Cause you've spoiled stuff for me plenty of times. So I'm happy I got to spoil that for you. I thought the match was fine. There was a spot in it I absolutely hated, and I don't get why they did it. So they had Cardona trying to take the title into the ring, and then Bradshaw came out and clotheslined Cardona, who dropped the title onto the ring. And then Hendry stared at Bradshaw while he walked away. And then Cardona got up, got the belt, and still hit Hendry with it.
Yeah.
So, like, Bradshaw's clothesline accomplished nothing.
No. And they just stared at Hendry. So, like, really nothing happened.
Like, yeah. So, like, I don't understand that. Like, it didn't prevent Cardona from accomplishing his goal of hitting Joe Hendry with the belt at all. Right. So, I wish that would have been done better. It did feel very much like it, because Hendry is limited in ring. Yeah. He's just incredibly over. The crowd was into it. But, you know, they felt like they wrestled very much a WWE match. It was fine. The crowd bought into it. The crowd loves Joe Hendry, and I think he's very over. But aside from that, like, it was fun. I just, that one spot really stuck out to me. Like, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah. I agree. If you want more of my TNA takes, head to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. I did 90 minutes on just TNA yesterday. Transferring heat, Zeta Steel did an interview. So Zeta Steel is WWE ID talent. Did an interview this week, was asked about working for TNA. She said she had just heard from Gail Kim, and she said seems possible. My question is, do you think WWE ID will benefit TNA? I do think it'll benefit TNA. I think Zeta Steel should come in. In fact, before she signed with WWE ID, I think I texted Joe, and Joe's like, you need to check out Zeta Steel, because I was doing I was going to do a podcast about indie talent that TNA should sign. So I looked into her, and she's a good young talent. I think she kind of checks a lot of the boxes. And so I thought, you bring her in, and then she signs a WWE ID. I think TNA is a perfect home for WWE ID talent. Mm-hmm. I do think eventually the novelty of them working together is going to wear off. But TNA right now is benefiting from WWE being cool and WWE telling their audience to go watch TNA and support TNA. Eventually that's going to wear off, and people are going to realize that it's more of a farm system for WWE, and that might end up hurting them in the long run. But short term, I'd say if you get a chance to work with Zeta Steel, I think, yeah, hell yeah, you bring her in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think she's one of the top unsigned women out there in terms of, like, she's not signed in wrestling on NXT, Raw or SmackDown, Dynamite or Collision, Ring of Honor. I think she's one of the top ones out there. I do think WWE will encourage their ID talent to work for TNA, because you get to see, how do they work on a camera? How do they work in front of a live crowd? Mm-hmm. You have WWE people back there you can get reports from. How do they work in a locker room? You know, locker room, like how you mesh with the locker room is really important in an environment like that. So I absolutely could see that happening.
And TNA needs more women on the roster. They need more young talent regardless. But right now, like women specifically, they just lost Jordynne Grace. Mm-hmm. Masha Slamovich has no opponents. They have Tessa Blanchard, but they want to hold that one off for a while. So they ended up I'm not going to say who won, but they actually had a battle royal at the TV tapings. Mm-hmm. And the battle royal was a bunch of nobodies. Gotcha. So nobody won it. So
yeah.
They're going to cycle through Masha's opponents relatively quick. So they need to add more so they can create some more intriguing matches, because the roster on that side is pretty thin. So I think the men's side is actually pretty good, that to where they're essentially going to be doing every taping a title match with Joe Hendry, is kind of what it looks like. The taping they did on Friday, he actually had another world title match, which is not something they normally do. So
yeah. What are the odds that Joe Hendry gets his John Cena match? Like, is it less than one?
I would say probably less than zero.
Okay. So like in the negative.
Could they? So a lot of times it seems like Hendry is cosplaying as Cena. Like he's like Scottish John Cena, that you might as well put him in jorts. I do think that they do cross paths in the Rumble. I could see that.
Yeah. That seems like the most logical place for it to happen. And then Joe Hendry can put that all over the internet. Yeah. And use it to get TNA more over, and try to convince people that John Cena will come to TNA and wrestle him.
Right. I've seen people out there saying that maybe John Cena's like, he can't win the WWE title or either one, like the Universal or the WWE.
Yeah.
So maybe he should go win the TNA title to break Ric Flair's record. And I'm telling you guys, it's not going to happen.
They wouldn't count it.
No.
Like Ric Flair had more than 16 world title wins. WWE only counts 16.
Yeah. That's just the number they use on TV because some of them were happened in Japan, so they never got recognized in America. So
Yeah. So I absolutely see John Cena winning one of the two titles this year. I think that'll happen.
I think he wins Elimination Chamber and then goes and takes the belt from people are saying Cody, but I don't know, man. I think they'd run the risk of people turning on Cody. Although, when is Joe Hendry going to stop being over? Is the new winner? When are the fans going to turn on Cody? Those things are happening concurrently.
The Cena one would be the one where I'd be like, the crowd's going to want Cena to win. That's why I think Gunther would be the better opponent for him. And
Cody's the bigger match, but you don't want to ruin the dynamic. Go with the heel.
You either get Cena over for pinning a heel or you get the heel over for pinning Cena. It's a win-win.
Yeah. Yep. But thank you so much, Joe, for stepping in. Obviously, prayers go out to the Oliva family. Mm-hmm. Hope you guys are doing well there in Wisconsin. So, hopefully JD is back next week. If not, I will figure something out, but I think he's going to be back next week. All right, guys, we went a little long, but I haven't talked to my cousin in a while. So I get my cousin on the air. We just go a little bit longer. But that is going to do it for us this time on the Mike and JD Show. And until next time, mahalo.
Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A made no rains on the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game, better bring your A game. Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A made no rains.
Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.